because these are Section 76 bills, meaning that we will have to do work so that in the end, when it comes to Parliament, indeed, good work has been done in this regard. Without much ado, I'm going to give to Mr. Salisa to start working on the bills, briefing on ARTO. I don't know how we'll be doing that, whether we will get a briefing on ARTO. I tend to be advised, Honorable, we get a briefing on ARTO, we discuss, and then the briefing on MTA, and then we discuss, or we get all the briefings at once, and then we discuss at once. I tend to be advised by yourself, Honorable, as to how we're going to be handling the whole matter. Honorable
Musinga. Thank you, Chair. I would want to ask, Chair, that we handle these separately since there is no real relation between the three, and because every individual aspect has very particular matters pertaining to them.
Thank you very much. I think we'll follow as advised that we discuss them individually. I've forgotten to acknowledge the lawyers from Parliament who are here with us. But let me indicate that the Minister and the Deputy Minister has tendered apologies for today's meeting. And the Honourable Mulaudzi is going to be debating this morning in Parliament. He will join us later, that's the indication. Mr. Salisa, let me hand it over to yourself. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee, my fellow colleagues from the Department as well as from the entity, RTI in particular. Thank you very much. We want just to tender another apology from the administrative side, which is Matabata Mugonyama is not well, as well as JD, I think he's still on leave, but they are duly represented today for today's discussion. I would therefore, without a waste of time, ask Advocate Masombuga to lead us on the two pieces of legislation. Then after that, will be taken tense in terms of answering the questions. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chairperson, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be presenting to you the Administrative Adjudication of Road Traffic Offences Amendment Bill 2015, and our lead presenter in that regard is Mr. John Musasing. Without much ado, Mr. Musasing, you can proceed to lead the presentation.
Thanks, Chairperson, honorable members, colleagues, representatives from the agency. I am John Musasing. I'll then be doing the presentation of the Administrative Adjudication of Road Traffic Offences. The presentation layout is basically, I'll be doing the background in terms of the proposed amendment, the object of the bill, the discussion on the object of the bill, clause by clause discussion on the bill, and what consultation we undertook before we came here, the financial implication, and the required parliamentary procedures. I'm not sure, Madam Chair, because you talked about the time frame that we have. I'm not sure whether would I want us to run through the presentation or zoom in to the object of the bill or the proposed amendments that are critical.
I think it will be very important that you do everything, but mindful of time. It is very important that you do everything, but mindful of time. How remember, if we can, we should be out of here in terms of the request from the House Chair by midday.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just then be running through the entire presentation speedily to try and save time. In terms of the background, the Administrative Adjudication of Road Traffic Offences Act seeks to promote road traffic quality by providing for a scheme that discourages road traffic contravention, facilitate the efficient collection of road traffic infringement, and basically to facilitate also the collection of revenue with regards to traffic violation. The Act has been in operation without the demerit points system on a pilot phase, which was done in the magisterial district of Tshwane and Gauteng and Johannesburg. We have, during that pilot process, the intention of the pilot process was then to try and learn from the pilot phase in terms of the difficulties that may arise with regards to the implementation of this administrative process. This administrative process. Since this process is obviously new in the context of the South African justice process, it was critical for us as the Department of Transport to do a pilot process to identify those hiccups that may arise with the implementation. And this pilot project assists us in identifying what we need to review in terms of the applicable legislation at any given time, so that when we do a national rollout, we are able then to can deal with the issues that we have identified in the pilot process, and that implementation or the national rollout does not have any hiccup with regards to administrative process that may arise as a result of that administrative process. As I indicated, the bill seeks to amend the Act in order to achieve the efficiency and the financial sustainability of issuing authorities as well as Road Traffic Enforcement Agency. The amendment identified in the bill will assist the agency as well as the issuing authority to be financially stable in order to proceed with proper implementation of the administrative process. Because one of the key issues that we have identified during the pilot process was the requirement that we have to serve all the documents by registered post. And if you look at it, the registered post was costly both to the issuing authority and to the entity as itself. Therefore, we wanted to review that particular process to ensure that some of the processes does not require us to serve any document through registered post. In terms of the object of the bill is to amend the road traffic offences to provide for the financing of the authority by empowering the authority through its board to open a bank account, to do away with the issuing of warrants by the repealing of Section 21, to simplify the manner of service of documents by the introduction of electronic methods of service in addition to the required methods of service, to provide for the apportionment of penalties, to provide for transitional provisions that may be required as a result of the amendment that we would have then amended, and to provide for general provisions and any consequential amendments that may arise. In terms of the discussion on the object of the bill, is to empower the authority through its board to open a bank account. Currently, what's contained in the Principal Act is that the bank account has to be opened and managed by the Director General of the Department of Transport. So the intention here is then to amend that specific provision to enable the board of the Road Traffic Enforcement Agency to be accountable for the opening of that bank account, to empower the authorities through the issuing of a 32-day notice in the event that the infringer makes an insufficient payment in respect of a fine or the check used for payment is dishonored. The position before, therefore, was that an infringer who made partial payment and did not comply with the 32 days notice would be served with a warrant. The proposed bill repeals the issuance of a warrant against the infringer and replaces that process with a courtesy letter reminding the infringer to honor the payment that was dishonored by the check. Because if you look at it, if somebody issued a check and it was dishonored, the person would not have known that his or her check was dishonored. So we wanted to do a process whereby at least we remind the infringer that one way there were insufficient funds in his account and to come and rectify that particular process. Repeal of Section 21. The proposed repeal means that the consequence of a failure to comply with an enforcement order will be dealt with in terms of Section 25 of the Act, which provides that an infringer who does not comply with an enforcement order may not be issued with a driving license, a professional driving permit, or a motor vehicle license disc in respect of a motor vehicle registered in the name of the infringer until such enforcement order has been complied with. The key amendment, which is obviously what we seek to achieve, is the introduction of electronic methods of service. As I indicated in my introduction that the Principal Act requires us to serve any document through registered post. So by introduction of an electronic service, we are then allowing the agency to serve certain documents by means of electronic service, thereby reducing the cost that the agency and issuing authorities were incurring as a result of serving documents through registered post. The apportionment of penalties, the bill proposes the sharing of penalties paid in instances where the infringer makes a deposit into the bank account of the authority, in which case the authority, having deducted its share, pays over the remainder to the relevant issuing authority. The transitional provision is amended by the substitution of the offense to infringement. Notice already issued in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act should be proceeded to be finalized in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act. The general provisions and consequential amendments, minor and major infringement is replaced with infringement. A national contravention register is repealed to be replaced with the National Traffic Offense Register. Then I'll then be moving to clause-by-clause discussion of the proposed amendment. Amendment of Section 1 of the Act is as follows. The definition of acceptable identification has been qualified to also include the words clear, legible, and a certified copy. The definition of agency is deleted and replaced with the definition of authority. So the agency will then be referred to as the Road Traffic Infringement Authority. The definition of electronic service is included to enable the authority to be able to serve documents through electronic means of service. The definition of infringement is qualified to include any act or omission in contravention of the Principal Act or the road traffic legislation. The definition of major infringement and minor infringement are deleted as a result of the amendment of both the major infringement and minor infringement. The definition of the National Contravention Register is deleted and replaced by the definition of the National Road Traffic Offenses Register. Definition of representation officer is aligned with Section 10 of the Principal Act. Clause 2, amend Section 4 of the Act, which provides for the object and functions of what would then be called the authority. Clause 2 is mainly deleted. Clause 2 mainly deletes subsection 2E of Section 4 of the Act, which deals with the issuing by the registrar of a warrant against an infringer who has failed to comply with an enforcement order made in terms of the Act. The deletion of this subsection is aligned with the proposed repeal of Clause 7 of the Bill, which is then Section 21 of the Act, which deals with the issuing of warrant by the Register. Clause 3 amends Section 13 of the Act, which provides for the financing of the agency, or which will then be called now, for the purpose of the presentation, the authority. In said paragraph 2, capital A, of in subsection 1, of the provision that deals with penalties issued and collected on behalf of the issuing authorities. Clause 4 amends section 15 of the Act, which provides for the banking account of the authority. Provides that the authority may open a bank account and maintain one or more bank accounts with the approval of the board of the authority. The accounts must be used to deposit monies received by the authority from issuing authorities, driving license testing centers, registering authorities. And furthermore, replaces the word agency with the word authority as indicated. Clause 5 amends section 19 capital B of the Act by deleting subsection 1B and subsection 2C of section 19 capital B of the Act. The deletion of this subsection is aligned with the proposed repeal of clause 7 of the bill, referring to section 21 of the Act, which deals with the issuing of warrants by the registering authority. Clause 6 amends section 20 of the Act by deleting subsection 3B. Section 20 of the Act provides for the enforcement order issued by the Registrar in respect of a failure to pay fines imposed for a traffic-related infringement. Section 23B stipulates that the enforcement order must state that a failure to comply with the requirements of the enforcement order not later than 32 days after the date of service of the order will result in a warrant being issued to recover the applicable penalty and fees. The deletion of this sub-paragraph is in line with the repeal of clause 7 of the bill, which deals with the issue of warrants by the Registrar. Clause 7 repeals section 21 of the Act. The proposed repeal means that the consequence of a failure to comply with an enforcement order will be dealt with in terms of section 25 of the Act, which provides that an infringer who does not comply with an enforcement order may not be issued with a driving license, professional driving permit, or a motor vehicle license disc. In respect of an infringer notice, section 19(2)(c) of the Act provides that an infringer who fails to comply with an infringement notice, the authority must issue a courtesy letter and serve to it to an infringer stating that a failure to comply with the requirement of the courtesy letter within the prescribed time will result in the Registrar issuing an enforcement order in terms of section 20 of the Act. Clause 8 amends section 22 of the Act, which provides for the procedure in terms of wherein an infringer has elected to go to trial and does not pay a fine but elects to be tried in court. Clause 8 seeks to delete subsection 1B of section 22, which provides that if the execution of a warrant in terms of section 21(1) produces no immovable property, to seize and sell the infringed, or otherwise fail to comply with the enforcement order after the execution of a warrant, the authority must inform the issuing authority, who must cancel the infringer's notice that has been issued. The deletion corresponds to the proposed repeal of clause 7 of the bill, which deals, as I indicated, with the issuing of warrants. Clause 9 amends section 30 of the Act, which provides for a service of document to an infringer, personally or by registered mail. The proposed amendment provides for the service of document by means of postage and or electronic services. The amendment also provides that a document which is deemed to have been served on the infringer on the 10th date of postage or electronic transferring of that document being reflected in the National Contravention Offense Register unless the evidence contrary is adduced, which evidence may be in the form of an affidavit by the infringer to say he or she has not received either the electronic service of document. Clause 10 substitutes the whole of Section 32 of the Act, which provides for the apportionment of penalties. The new subsection provides for the apportionment and distribution of penalties received by the authority to the relevant issuing authorities after deduction of an amount equal to the prescribed amount that the issuing authority is entitled to retain, and the penalties collected by or on behalf of the issuing authority in terms of the Act, which must then be paid to the Road Traffic Infringement Authority. In addition, the authority may withhold a penalty due to the issuing authority if there is evidence of non-compliance with the Act by that issuing authority until such time that the issuing authority complies with what has been prescribed in the Act. Clause 11 amends Section 35 of the Bill, which deals with transitional provisions, provides that a notice issued in terms of Section 56 or 341 of the Criminal Procedure Act before the date of commencement of Section 17 may be continued and finalized under the Criminal Procedure Act. It must be noted that currently only the dates for commencement of Section 17 are 1 July 2008 in respect of the city of Tshwane and 1 November in respect of the city of Johannesburg. This is in line with Section 36(2) of the Act, which provides that the different date may be determined in respect of different provisions of the Act in different areas of the Republic. Clause 12 provides for the substitution of certain expressions. As I indicated, the agency is going to be replaced by the Road Traffic Infringement Authority. The Contravention Register is going to be replaced by the National Road Traffic Offenses Register. Clause 13 provides for the short title and commencement of the Act. In terms of the consultation process, we have undergone a stringent consultation with various stakeholders. Key stakeholders that were critical would be the Department of Justice, the SAPS, and the general public. We have also been contacted with our provincial counterparts in terms of the proposed amendment that we needed to amend of the Principal Act. We had a vigorous consultation with Justice in terms of some of the provisions, and subsequently there was consensus between ourselves and Justice in terms of what we proposed, and therefore the Department of Justice has agreed with regards to us processing the proposed amendment. Financial implication, one of the key financial implications of the proposal, as I indicated, is that what was required before of us serving documents through registered mail would then, in terms of the financial implication, would be reduced if we were to serve certain documents by registered mail, because by electronic service, because electronic service is cheaper as compared to registered mail. Certain documents will still be retained to be served by registered mail, but as reminders of people to make certain payment does not necessarily require or need to be served through a registered mail. Those documents may be served through electronic means of service. So this process of introduction of electronic service will greatly go a long way in ensuring that we are able to roll out and implement ARTO as it was envisaged. And the pilot project that we have undertaken in the cities of Swan and Johannesburg with regards to the cost thereof has taught us that serving of registered mail is quite costly. So that is why there's a need for us to amend that requirement of a registered post to ensure that we serve this document through electronic service. In terms of the parliamentary procedure, the department and the state law advisors have the opinion that this bill must be tagged as a Section 76 as it falls within the functional areas listed in Schedule 4 of our Constitution. Kia la boca.
Honorable members, there we are. Can we engage with the proposed amendments as per the proposal from the Department of State? Honorable De Freitas, Honorable Nsinga, and also Honorable Hadere, in that line.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a few questions and some comments as well. From what I'm having read the actual act itself and the presentation here, it appears that the main objective here is to save money, not to enforce justice. So the main thing that jumps out at me is the fact that there will be no registered post and that the electronic mail will be used instead. So the very basis of justice is about ensuring that, in this case, that the receiver of the notice, that there's proof that this person has received this notice. So the question is, how would you prove through electronic mail that this person will be receiving the notice? How would you deal with people who don't have electronic mail? And whereas in registered mail, were forced to sign a document to receive it. It also does away with warrants and talks about a courtesy letter. I don't know what a courtesy letter is, so that perhaps can be explained, because it has no authority, from my understanding, to or the equivalent of what a warrant would be. Then on talks about throughout this presentation, I see in the document it talks about the National Contraventions Register to be replaced with the National Traffic Offences Register. Besides the name, what is actually the change? What actually is the difference? And the same can be asked later on in. When you talk about an agency and authority, besides the name, what actually is the difference? I'm just checking my other questions. So in the case of electronic mail, how would you prove that you actually received the warrant or a courtesy letter, whatever that is? Want to explain to me? I think that's the gist of it, because until I had those responses, it's kind of difficult to move beyond that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chi, and thank you for the presentation. I have three questions. Fundamental question, one practical one, and then one of more technical nature. To get to the fundamental question, and since this is a progress report, I would really appreciate just a since we've had extended court referrals from 2011 to 2016, and as you would understand, the implementation of R2 is absolutely dependent on the eNATA system, which unfortunately is caught up in this tug of war, understandably, between Tasimo and DOT. My next question, of practical nature, would comment on the readiness, and specifically the experiences from the 18 pilot projects that we had. To be more specific, JMDP had very particular challenges in the pilot process, and there I'm specifically referring to issues around Section 30, Subsection 1, with the serving of the infringements personally, and all the whole registered mail thing. Now, the solution really, to a lesser extent, talks to the challenges and the experiences which they've had, because there were other suggestions as well. So why were these recommendations and suggestions, how was it considered, to just give us an idea of how the experience was weighed up, and why was this final decision taken to take this direction now, which is expressed by the amendments? Secondly, also, the whole issue around the National Contraventions Register, JMDP had particular issues and challenges around that, and also the whole issue around the section that deals with the no admission of guilt portion. Then, with the launch and the revealing of how this whole idea would work out, it was said that through the e-natus system, it would be possible to pay your fines at retail stores, at banks, at airports, even at border controls. Now, are we still heading in that direction? Will we still, in fact, offer those services? On your page 10 in the amendment bill, page 10, chapter 4, subsection B, dealing with fleet operators, I still have a big concern about this, how this would affect fleet operators. And if you could just allude, expand a bit on that. Then also in relation to the eNATA system, then the learner license testing, there were some pilot projects around that. I would like to hear how that went off. And then my technical question deals specifically with Section 20 on how the whole procedure would pan out and how this would affect processing, because very specific number of days and processes are mentioned as a sequence of operation. But in terms of the consequence of this procedure, for instance, if someone would argue that it wasn't 32 days, but in fact only 20 days, you know, how would one prove this? Because when exactly did I receive the notice, if this is electronically? When I opened it, when it landed in my inbox, but I still haven't opened it? It's technical in nature, but this is what we'll have to deal with. So in terms of producing solutions and your thinking around this, I would like to hear what you say. And in general, I still have a concern of the serving of notice, and I have a huge concern about the real alignment of the alleged transgression and the perpetrator. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Khadere.
No, thanks, Chair. I think one of the questions on the Section 20 needs to be addressed, because the issue of, you know, giving an infringer the notice, you must get a guarantee that this person will be able to respond. If you don't get a guarantee, you know, you'll assume that the person received, but the person didn't receive. But the other thing is that I'm trying to find proper understanding, in terms of your CBA, that you're going to, you know, put this thing to the Criminal Procedure Act. I'm trying to understand what are the implications in terms of that. Because my little understanding says that simply means we are creating, we'll be having more criminals in the country. Because most of them, they'll be, you know, getting this infringement and find themselves, you know, being criminalized. And you know the implication of being criminalized, what does that mean? That simply means whatever, when you want to get a job whatsoever, you're going to be able to get a job because of that criminal crime that has been against. I'm trying to check to understand that because it really worries me. But the other thing in terms of your clause 4, point B, the second point that says we provide the authority that may be able to maintain one or more bank accounts with the approval of the board. I would like to also put an amendment that you must get a consensus from the minister, because I believe that the board also accounts to the minister. But once you give all the powers to the board, we can't give you 100% of the powers. We must give some of the powers to the minister, because that's where you account. Because once they allow you a free flow of opening accounts, you have opening accounts that you cannot be able to account for. So I think that one you must be able to amend and put that particular point. The other one, it's in relation to your stakeholder consultation. I'm trying to get you to understand that in your engagement with all your stakeholders, what were the issues that were raised there? What were the other concerns that came with the stakeholders, if there were any? If there were not, it really surprises me, because as some of these issues were raised, the other members have just raised, you know, that are a really serious concern. I think everybody should learn. We can't have a common understanding, all of us, but we need to get a clarity in this. But if we can give a clarity to say, what were the concerns of the other stakeholders, but what were the issues, basically? Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable
Hadith.
Thank you,
Chairperson. Mine is one issue. I think the colleagues have raised it. It is said that there was a pilot phase in Johannesburg and Tshwane, and there were some challenges and efficiencies that we identified. Can we get a narrative of those? What are those lessons? Because for me, as a member of parliament, if I go into the assembly, I don't go there and discuss the technicalities, close what and that and that. I have to deal also with the politics of the amendment bill. I think that must be very clear, that we are elected by the public to deal with certain things. Which are those challenges? And which are those efficiencies? I would appreciate if the DG Chairperson can put them in writing, that these are the lessons. Because the other members of the parliament, I mean, they have got other things to do. We have to convince them that it didn't work this manner in the two metros because of the following challenges. So me, I don't know them except what I get here verbal. I would prefer that they be properly written. Like if you have got a case study, you said I involved on this case study. These are the lessons that I learned from the case study, and this is what I recommend. That will be proper checklist for me. The other technical stuff I don't have a problem with. Moreover, I'm covered by what the other colleagues have said. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masakani. Can we? Honorable Ramatakan. Welcome, Honorable
Sibandi. No, thank you, Honorable Chair. Just two quick points. Well, surely, first of all, let's say that the amendment, I think, as presented, they seek to soften some of the clauses that were clearly rushed in the Act. So I think we should recognize that it is in fact softening and understanding society and understanding voters. So I think on that score, we should say that we are going to engage with the bill, of course, but as an initial comment, I think some of the presentation, the clause softened some of those clauses that were really hard clauses in the current principal act. Dr. Chet, I noticed that there is a running theme around the withholding of a disc in the event that infringement has not been addressed. But I did not hear how we're going to resolve that particular issue. Because the disc and non-renewal of the disc does not mean the vehicle doesn't have wheels. And it doesn't have ignition and the engine. So it means the motor car can still run. So I don't know whether you, in terms of the other end, maybe traffic end, so one that's hope to deal with that particular question. Maybe something that you need to think about. The last one I want just to know, the notices issue. I think it's understandable, the issue about electronic vis-a-vis the registered mail. But I'm just thinking, if I refer to my hometown in a rural town where you don't quite have this Wi-Fi, you don't have this internet, you don't have this. Now you depend only on that emphasis on the electronics, with the hope that a rural man like me would have received the notice, and your action will immediately move to a courtesy letter, which, as I understand you correctly, it has authority of compliance. Otherwise, if you issue a courtesy letter, and that letter, courtesy letter, is given in power by law, by the Act, it means it must be acted upon. So once that happens, there's little talk on the issue whether we receive or not receive. How are we going to deal with that particular aspect in terms of motorists? Because you can't say all of them, motorists as we know them in the country, they have an electronic means of receiver of a post. So if you remove the other and you leave only the main communication as electronic, you have a, I know you said that it does not mean that you are not going to submit or send other registered letters. But I think it's just an issue of managing it. How are we going to be able to manage that particular aspect? Those are the two questions for me, Chair. Thanks. Oh no, the benchmarking. Maybe you can talk to benchmarking as you end, in terms of, because you also learn from others. How do you benchmark this? To benchmark with the first world, or benchmark with the developing world like ourselves, and what you find.
Thank you very much, Honourable Spender.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I'd like to apologize for being late. I'll explain later. But I'll join my colleagues maybe in terms of the questions, because the advantage the documents sent to us in advance. Chairperson, let me take the rider on was raised by Honorable Khatib, the issue of this bank, if you wanted to open a bank account. If it doesn't link, because you see, I think you are an accounting authority. If you are an accounting authority, the minister is a person who's supposed to have a say to assist us in terms of accounting as a leader in transport. And then also, that is my first concern. And then the second one, that one which was raised by Honorable Nelson Ramatlakana next to me, the issue of your system. You see, my concern, remember where we are coming from, the issue of the rural areas, which is the former homelands and allies, whereby the issue of the addresses are still a question. Remember that noise which was made in terms of the elections, in terms of the people who are not stable, in terms of informal settlements and alike. So my question, is your system able to speak to each other? How are we going to link? How are we going to connect from those people? So that is my question. And then also, Chairperson, my concern about the resisting, I wanted to just, if they can elaborate further in terms of stakeholders. I wanted to find out in terms of proper consultation. Because, you know, in nowadays, a lot of people, they used to take us to court. You are not consulted. Have you consulted thoroughly? If possible, those people have been consulted in terms of stakeholders, which we are aware involved. So that next time when politically, as what my colleagues have said, were able to defend that, you know, proper consultation was done because those stakeholders were involved. If maybe you can clarify us on that one. And then, yeah, the other one, also, I don't know, just to make any reputation because I wanted to raise the thing of how you could manage to the debt collections from the motorists, whereby it's not yet clear about their addresses and the like. Because of the issues which was raised by colleagues, where in some of the places we're still experiencing, they don't have those sophisticated system of internet and the like. They are even struggling even to get a phone. There is a challenge of this thing of Vodacom or Cell C or Telcom. Then how about this? How are we going to do it if they don't have, in terms of connection, in terms of the systems? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm going to send it back to you and your team. But I also wanted to check that in terms of the pilot project, from the look of things, it was done in urban areas. I wonder if you have thought of the rural areas, what will be, from what we would get when you will be sending your experience of the pilot project, the findings of the pilot project, how do you now relate that to the rural areas of the province, because they, much as you it was in the county province only, think of KZN that has extreme rural areas and the urban areas, think of other provinces where you have this type of the rural towns. I'm trying to say, how will you really look into those type of situations? Other questions I have been covered. Back to you, Dr. Kabisi.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. I think what we'll do, we will take turns and respond to questions. We've got our colleagues here from Artia as well, who have been very hard at work with the consultation processes. I would like them to take us through the consultation processes so that we can allay fears of the members of the portfolio committee in terms of the in-depth and detailed consultative processes that we undertook. On the issues of approval by the minister, I fully agree that yes, it has been an omission from our side. Although the board is a strategic gives strategic direction to the entity, but they are accountable to the minister as a shareholder. So that one is going to be rectified. We will do that as requested by the members. We'll emphasize on that clause 4, which has been highlighted by Honorable Hadebe. We will deal with that. On the issue of the guarantee of the letters that are going to be received, whether they indeed received the infringement letters, I would like us to dwell on that because it's quite an issue. which we need to clarify as to how do we know that the infringer has received the courtesy notice, especially on the rural areas where the connectivity is just a problem. So we'll also like my colleagues also to get into that so that Jeff Chue will also be in the issues in terms of that. Let me just address the issue of the e-native and the backlog that we have in the court of law. On the 24th, I think it's in the next week, Tuesday, we are going to court to hear the outcome of what has been happening in the court of law. We are going there just to listen what the judgment is going to be. When we consulted with our legal team, we want to believe that anything is possible, but we are very optimistic that the judgment will come to our favor. We want, therefore, to say, once all this, I fully agree that it's linked to the e-natives. All that we are talking about is linked to the e-natives. We want to believe that, I know the judgment is not going to be handed over on the 24th, but we have to wait maybe for a few months or so, but we are very much optimistic that it's going to come to our favor. We have got plan B in the event whatever happens, but I'm not going to discuss it here. So, but we will make sure that the country is not going down, and we'll make sure that we get the system up and running, so that all what we are talking about here today, the ARDO, the rollout of ARDO and everything else, does not yield into a fruitless exercise. That is what we are going to do. We are very much aware of that, and we are on top of things at government. I would therefore ask my colleagues to take some other issues in terms of what has been raised, and I think let's take turns and answer. There's John Mustafin here, who has been doing the presentation, and Jeff Chue, the registrar from our ARTIA, where they've been very much hard at the consultation processes and also consolidating the inputs from all the role players and stakeholders that have been engaged. We've got also Advocate Masombuga, who is also coordinating the legislative reviews and amendments for our Department of Transport. So we'll take turns, therefore, Chairperson and other members to deal with the issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chavisa, Madam Chair. I think maybe in terms of the questions raised and the basis or the need for us to do the required amendment, I think one of the things that comes out is what was identified in the pilot project, what obviously this process is intended to achieve. Key to that pilot project, obviously the pilot project was basically intended for us to try and address some of the deficiencies that may arise out of this administrative process, because if you look at our current practice, the bulk of road traffic related infringement was basically dealt with through the criminal justice process. And a principal decision was then taken to say, obviously, because of the backlog that exists within the criminal justice system, we then need to do this administrative kind of a process where we start to focus on road traffic related violations to say the offense that one commits is commensurate with the offense that person has been found to have committed, and the sentence thereof is commensurate with the offense, so that you do not have a misalignment of imposing of fines or judgment vis-a-vis a particular offense. That's why we said we needed to do this administrative process. And that pilot project then identified the deficiencies, as you indicated, in Gauteng and Tshwane, to say, what are the deficiencies? One of the key deficiencies was the cost of the rollout of ARDO, which basically relates to the saving of certain documents through registered post. Now, the saving of documents through registered post imply that you must, even if John Mustafin has received a notice through a post,
But because we are now implementing an administrative process, which then says, remind John Musasin to come and pay, you then need to do that process through registered post, even though John Musasin has got that fine that says, you have committed an offense, you must then go and pay, because obviously the time frame wherein I must go and pay is clearly outlined in the fines or a notice that I may have received. So the intention is not necessarily to remove all the processes that have a consequences attached to it. We are saying if there is going to be a consequence attached to a particular process, that one we still have to retain the registered savings of documents. If ever it's just a courtesy letter, we are then saying a courtesy letter is just a reminder. We need to serve this process through whatever means of service that we can do. But the principle here is not that we want to basically collect revenue. The initial idea of the administrative adjudication of road traffic offenses was to try and change the attitude of drivers with regards to road traffic related transgressions, so that people feel that the commission of an offense has a serious consequences attached to it. And they start then changing their driving behavior and their driving pattern with regards to certain offenses. So this is basically where we are coming from. And this is what we ultimately want to achieve. And to the extent that the pilot project and those processes have identified those issues, this is the plea that we want to place before you to say the ultimate objective is to change the driver behavior to ensure that there's a reduction of fatalities on our road, to have a process which takes into consideration the offense vis-a-vis the punishment that you met against a particular transgressor. And basically that's what we want to achieve. I'll hand over to my colleagues from the Road Traffic Infringement Agencies to respond to some of the questions.
Before Jeff comes in, I just want to assure members that the issues of lessons that we learned from the pilot project within the Gauteng province, we will do them in writing, because there is quite a number of lessons that we learned, and also the mitigating factors to those factors. So we will definitely write back to the secretariat of the committee so that members can also indulge in terms of what happened and how we resolve what is the mitigating factor. Because part of the consultative process that we had, those were factored into our process, into our consultative processes. So that one definitely will do in writing, as what has been requested by Honorable Matswanga to say we will definitely do that. The issue of control measures on the no issuance of a disc, I just wanted to, so that we can be quick on our responses. I know Jeff will come to the issues of infringement notices and courtesy letters and stuff like that. On the issue of a no-show of a disc, that's a traffic offense. We just want to say that. We know that when you say you are not going to be given a disc when you have got an outstanding infringement, then it says that other people will find some people ignoring the laws of this country, becoming disobedient. We will deal with them decisively on our road. We do have traffic officers. We have got a very working relationship now between the National Traffic Police, our law enforcement officers in the province, as well as at the municipal level. We are working very, very much closely together. We have found ourselves, we interface very well. We have multidisciplinary roadblocks together with the SAPS. So what I'm saying is, you might think that you are doing yourself justice by not going and pay your outstanding infringement. But at the same time, we are not going to be using you. We will catch you, and definitely you will be arrested. There's a fine for failure to display a disc and also having your vehicle not roadworthy but put on a road system. So we will deal with that. We'll be up to the task when it comes to that one. Maybe I can ask my colleague Jeff Chue to take us through these other issues that have been raised here. Just wanted to cover those two. Thank you.
Before Mr. Chue comes in, let us get it clear from the staff. Can we get the responses by Friday? There's a tendency in the department that when we say bring a letter within 48 hours, it never happens. Can we make sure that get those experiences in from Tshwane and Johannesburg by close of business on Friday?
Thank you, Chairperson.
I'll hold you accountable and the data visa if it doesn't arrive by Friday, because I know that the secretary will send it to us before close of business on Monday if it has arrived on Friday.
Thank you, Chairperson. We will definitely, you'll receive, the secretariat will receive it on Friday, by 4 o'clock Friday. Thank you very much.
Well, I wouldn't let you swim all by yourself. Let me take the side with Mr. Tabisa and say, yes, I will ensure that we give you assistance that it arrives by Friday. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, Acting DG, my colleagues, I thank you very much for the time. Let me start first by appreciating the questions and the comments that have come from various members. I would like to take the opportunity to inform the committee that I'm here with my executive as well as two members of our board, Dr. Kunza and Mr. Ben Martinisi. I'm going to allow the members of my team to deal with the question that has been asked, and if there's anything that has been left behind, then I'll be able to come at the end of the process to be able to deal with that. But before I hand over to Mr. Sulatani, I would like to touch on perhaps one or two key issues. And perhaps the question that has been asked by Honorable Defraitis, the answer thereof can be extrapolated from the comments that Honorable Ramatlakane has raised in terms of saying that perhaps it would seem that the proposal in terms of the bill seeks to soften some of the harsh aspects that are contained in the Act. To some extent, it may be true, but also the whole intention is to be able to introduce efficiencies that will enhance the operation for us to be able to achieve our objectives. Honorable Defraitis, it may seem that the intention is a financial aspect. In fact, it is not. We have taken cognizance of all the challenges that have been experienced in terms of the operations and extrapolated the lessons that have been learned therefrom. Basically, three categories of the challenges that we had experienced. The first one was system-related deficiencies that have been identified in terms of the operational aspects in the functionalities of the National Contravention Register. The second part related to the operations as how we viewed the impact that it had on law enforcement and the interaction with the various forms and the procedures thereof. The last category was the legislative deficiencies, that being the process that we currently are undertaking. Section 21 in itself is a proposal that we're making to be able to repeal that. We have taken cognizance of the legislative progress that has been made. For example, one can be able to look at some of the newer acts that have been passed, the Promotion of Administrative Justice, the Promotion of Access to Information Act, the new National Credit Act. And on that basis, the current form of the ARTO Act, which was passed in 1998, makes provision that if one had not been paying particular attention to outstanding infringement, it ultimately results in the register issuing a warrant of execution on the movable property of that particular infringer. And therefore, given the socio-economic dynamics that we have and the progress that has been made, we have recognized that it is not a system that we can be able to implement. And therefore, in the absence of any kind of financial agreement, the basis upon which by default any defaulting party can find themselves being subjected to the movable property being confiscated is now absent within the outdoor environment. And therefore, we recognize that the true essential power in terms of the act is the issuing of an enforcement order. And the enforcement order has the power that it stops one from doing any business with any issuing authority or licensing department in the whole country. You would not be able to renew your driving license, to renew your motor vehicle license, your driving license card, or even operator card. And therefore, when you're dealing with this aspect, you want to make sure that the legislative framework that is contained within the administrative part of the ARTO remains thereof. Whereas currently it says, if you have not been able to complete everything, it goes on to the Criminal Procedure Act. Failure of finalizing everything in the Criminal Procedure Act, it wants to be able to dictate the process and say, bring it back within the ARTO aspect. And therefore, we sought to be able to completely do away with Section 21. So those are some of the key elements. But particularly, everything else that we do, we need to also exercise fiscal prudence. And on that basis, that is the reason why the issuing of notices is the actual origin of everything that happens within the ARTO environment. In the absence of the proof that this particular individual has been informed, you therefore would not be able to undertake the subsequent processes. This is part of what ties on to the question that has been raised by Honorable Sibande, Honorable Ramatlakane, and the Honorable Chairperson. When you're talking about the mechanisms that we can implement in terms of proving the service, have we considered those people within the rural areas? I would like to emphasize that coming with the intervention of introducing electronic service does not, in essence, do away with the traditional methods of service. We are simply adding onto those methods. We are not eliminating registered mail. Registered mail will still be there because you recognize that the post office in itself, for example, has got a network that stretches in rural areas, in other far outlying areas. However, given recognition to technological innovation and this highly efficient global village that we are living in, we also want to take advantage of the power of those technological innovations by including, amongst others, electronic service. And therefore, it will be an interactive process that assists the greater majority of those infringers to can interact with the process as soon as they would have committed a particular infringement. And that becomes the very key basis upon us coming up with these other innovations here. I'm going to hand over, Chairperson, to my team. We'll start with Mr. Suletani, and anything else that would not have been covered, then I will close it at the end of it. Thank you.
Can you switch on your mic?
The question was raised earlier, Chair, regarding the difference between agency and authority and why we do want to move away from agency. Chairperson, members will remember that as an entity within the Act, there was no power of this entity to do certain things. And this amendment, we therefore suggest that if issuing authorities are going to be doing things in contravention of the Act, we must have power to retain some of the money that is due to them so that they comply with the Act. This came from Chairperson, the fact that at some point the RTIA has to face litigation there due to issuing authorities neglected to do certain things as prescribed to them. The public protector did come out here that certain things need to be done because the issuing authority did not do what it's supposed to do. Before that, we tried to make sure that the issuing authority complied, but because the Act doesn't give us power, we could not. So we are trying to remedy that situation whereby issuing authorities, they are not just going to enforce the law and just make money out of the process, but we need to make sure that we are going to achieve road safety as we do this. Chairperson, there's another issue on what Mr. Shu has referred to in terms of election safety, saving of me. Mr. Shu has said it's effectiveness, it's cost. One of the things that for us was very crucial, we looked at 224 issuing authorities in this country, some of them very small. And if those issuing authorities were to enforce the law and send infringement notices at 22 rand a notice, it would mean they were not going to afford it. So we looked at that, and there was a complaint when we were doing our interaction with them that they will not be in a position to do that. Hence, we went back and looked at within the pilot area. Johannesburg alone, on a monthly basis, was paying between 8 and 10 million just for notices. RTIA, we were paying between 5 and 6 million just for courtesy letters, which is just a reminder. So we looked at that and we realized that after we fail, if we don't have money to do those kind of things, we rather have a simple way which is more effective than the registered mail system. There was an issue about retail payments, payments at retail stores. Chairperson, beginning of this month, we have launched platforms of payments. We have now 2,366 extra platforms that we can pay at, and they are based at all the retail stores, Spa, ShopRite, Checkers, Pick and Pay. And end of this week, NetBank, which is the fourth bank, biggest bank, will be coming online. Currently, we have Standard Bank, we have Absa, we have FNB, and we also have South African Post Office, any post office. On top of that is all the issuing authorities and driving license testing centers in this country that you can pay. So I don't think, Chairperson, going forward, there's an excuse why people are not paying, because it's right there where they do business. Fleet operators, Chairperson, this is one of the issues that we realize, that the current act is actually causing problems for issuing authorities and ourselves. In the case of a company like Avis, which own, I think their vehicles are more than a million, if people are transgressing on the road and you must send all these notices through registered mail, it makes it very difficult for issuing authorities. In this instance, what we did consultations with Savrala and other fleet companies, and to that extent, we gave them an opportunity to interact with us through an interface where they see any infringement notices that they have. Once it's uploaded, they can go in and see, and they can do what we call a nomination, whereby they can say it's not the company, it was so-and-so driving. So for them, it has become very easy, and currently they were complaining about they are not receiving notices, but we've made it easier for them to understand that at some point we went to court where all the vehicles of Avis could not be licensed because they had enforcement orders, but we realized that we can't block the fleet. Then we changed the system where now we block the vehicle that was involved in the commission of infringement. So it's no longer going to be a whole fleet. It's only selected vehicles that were involved, if Avis is not going to do anything about the infringement. There was a question raised regarding CTA. Chairperson, the current bill talks to what is going to happen with the current notices under CTA. The Act says all the current notices that were issued under CTA, this needs to be finalized under CPA. If you have got a notice, you haven't paid, CPA must take over. It's not that after has been implemented, we take those notices and start processing them. No, they are going to be dealt with under them. Chairperson, I need to bring to the attention of this committee the fact that I think it was Honorable Kadebe who was talking to the process making South Africans criminals. In fact, the current ARTO process is alleviating that particular problem. In terms of the criminal procedure, if you pay any admission of guilt, Section 57 of the criminal procedure says you will have a criminal record. Now, in terms of ARTO, if ARTO is introduced, we take all those minor infringements, we call them minor infringements, and then we put them under the administrative, and then people will not have criminal records when they pay their fines or when they challenge this through an ARTO process. However, in terms of ARTO, there's infringements and there's also what you call offenses. The offenses, you're drinking and driving, overspeeding and so forth. Those offenses that are very serious, chapters, we don't take chances and put them under the criminal court, under the ARTO. They go straight to court and it must be dealt with in a court of law. Chairperson, the stakeholder comments we undertook that will come back. The issues surrounding that was raised by Honorable Ramatlakane, Mr. Chu, to deal with that. And the withholding of this, Chairperson, currently, as I indicated, you received an infringement notice and you have 32 days to react. And you have five options. You can either pay, you can challenge it through a representation, you can elect to go to court, you can arrange to pay in installment, or you can do nothing about it. If you do nothing about it, we send what is called a courtesy letter. This courtesy letter, Chairperson, it's just a reminder to say, by the way, you have a pass. But in terms of this, you must send it through registered mail as well. Current criminal procedure, everything is ordinary mail. And we are sending through this app. We want to make it easy, and we must make it effective as possible. We can send certain documents through ordinary mail. The list that is being held is withheld after 96 days of the whole process. If you don't respond, we remind you, if you don't respond 32 days after we've been remanded, then we'll send you another letter to say, now we are going to issue an enforcement order. On day 96, you put an enforcement order, and then you cannot interact with any authorities. Mr. Tavisa indicated, if you didn't receive your visa and you drive that vehicle on the road, in terms of Schedule 3 of ARTO Act, any unlicensed vehicle that is operated on our road, it becomes an offense. Not an infringement, but an offense. It means you must be arrested and go to court. So that's how we wanted to close these gaps, because if you make it an infringement, Jefferson, this person is going to continue getting infringement. At the end of the process, when demerit points are there, it's a demerit point, you can't drive on our road. So ARTO has got a process where it makes it easy for you to deal with issues. But if you are not a listener, if you are a visual infringer, then at the end, we make sure that you are not on the road by suspending your license. Chairperson, the issues that were raised about this electronic series and proof, we did some research in terms of how do courts deal with this particular aspect. And we found one case, I can't remember the citation, but where a person was served summonses in terms of the civil procedure, was served summonses through Facebook, and went to court, and the court upheld the service in terms of you did receive this thing you are supposed to. So in terms of this process, Chairperson, what you are doing is, if you receive an email, the system will indicate that it has been received. If the email doesn't exist anymore, it will say it doesn't exist. Once it is in your box and you see that it's a mail in your box, the legislation says 10 days after receipt of the infringement notice, we'll presume it's there. You can leave it there, don't open it, but it will show from our side that it has been received on the other side, and then 10 days later, the legislation, the presumption kicks in, and then we issue a courtesy letter. Currently, people do not go to post office. They see this little slip. They don't go and collect these things because they know what it is. And the law says, once it's at the post office, 10 days after that, it's presumed safe. The problem, Chairperson, is if, for any reason, the notice itself is not in the post office, what are the problems that you are facing? The current process, post office needs to give us feedback so that we are sure that these things happen. When post office has problems, we can't and road safety suffer. So through the electronic means, it will make sure that people who have registered
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to make some few emphasis on the points mentioned already. The bill is not about reducing the operational expenditure or trying to get more revenue from the motorists, but the bill seeks to bring in the softer issues of the society, making people responsible when they drive, making sure that people understand road safety, you know, and the implications thereof, and also to decriminalize the whole process. You know, most infringements do not have to be considered as offenses, because what that translates into is that when people elect to go to court, the court sits with thousands and thousands of those elections, and they can't even deal with one process. So taking this process of making it more administrative will then alleviate the burden from the court, will be able to deal with such minor offenses effectively better. In terms of electronic service will not only include email, it will also include SMSs, and most of the citizens in this country do have a cell phone. In terms of the benchmark, there was a question that requested an indication as to what other countries are doing. We did make some benchmark exercise, especially in Australia, and with regards to a disc not being renewed by the motorist, in Australia it even goes further to say, if they find a motorist on the road who has not paid an infringement, they take that license and cancel it immediately on the road. That's how they treat road safety in those countries. So they do not take chances. Thank you, citizen.
Not only that, perhaps mindful of the time, Chairperson, if I may just close off from our side by saying that if there's any other issues that we have not addressed, we can then be able to respond to in writing. And we will submit that together with a submission that will be coming from Acting DG Mr. Tabisa by Friday to the Portfolio Committee. But we do wish to thank the committee, and we've taken cognizance of the questions that have been raised, and we'll respond accordingly. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Humsinga, Honorable De Freitas. Those will be the last two, and then we'll move to the NRC itself.
Thank you, Chair. Just one very simple question. Say, and I'm going to sketch a scenario. Say, for instance, someone has not paid a fine. Whether that person is well aware of it or not, I mean, the intention of, you know, how this bill is structured is quite clear. So would that person then automatically move on to score level 2, score level 3, score level 4, up to score level 10 or whatever, and then lose his or her license? Just that simple question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson, if I may quickly respond on to that. That person would not lose the license immediately, because the procedure that is provided for the allocation of demerit points, number one, is upon the payment of the penalty. So you need to have interaction by that person that actually accepts that they've been wrong, they've contravened the law, so they make a payment. So that is an admission of penalty. We allocate the demerit points. Second part, if they have ignored the whole processes of the first 32 days when the issuing authority have informed them, we generate a courtesy letter, which is a reminder to that person. Still, if they ignore it, we take it then to the third phase with the issuing of an enforcement order. Only then do we apply the applicable demerit points onto that. The last level, when demerit points have been issued, if that person would have elected to have gone to court and subsequently they, it becomes a no tenor, then it comes back from the court process, we will be able to issue those demerit points. But in the main, there must be interaction between the agency and that individual.
Thank you, Chair. It's clear that we don't have enough time to complete this exercise, so we need to, as a committee, just plan out to interrogate this properly. I'm very uncomfortable with what is being presented. The questions have not been answered properly. And many of these aspects will be thrown out of court. That's the bottom line. So, and we don't have time to get into it. So, Madam Chair, I recommend that we schedule this in our programming time for the next while and interrogate this very, very, it's very important. We can't rush through this, and there's too many unanswered questions. Thank you.
Honourable Member, I think this is just a briefing from the department. We will still, as a committee, do intense deliberations on this legislation before we even go out on public hearings. So we just wanted to acquaint ourselves with what is happening with the bills. But definitely, there's a need for us to be able to do thorough work amongst ourselves as honourable members and the department, and before we go into the public, because this is one of the critical legislations that we have to deal with. So we can't really scratch the surface. We have to go intensely into the whole legislation. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Can we move to the next, honourable member, Clarissa, the NLT bill?
Thank you once again, Chairperson and members, colleagues. I would like to, I can see that Lusanda Madikizela, acting DDG Public Transport, because my Tabata is still sick, she is going to be taking us through the details of the presentation. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Acting DG, and all the colleagues in the House today. I will be taking us through the presentation for the National Land Transport Amendment Bill. If we look at the contents page on its own, we can see that it's quite a lengthy presentation, but I will try and focus mostly on the substantive amendments of the Act. I'll spend some time going through those particular slides and go fairly quickly through the others which seek to provide more clarity, and the ones that also provide for omissions in the Triggers Act, as well as some consequential amendments. I will start with the background. In terms of the background, the National Land Transport Act of 2009 was passed to further the process of transforming and restructuring the national land transport system, and this was obviously started by the previous National Land Transport Transition Act. The Act has met with quite a lot of success in achieving some of these objectives, the prime example being the consolidating of transport functions at the local municipal level. So what this amendment bill then seeks to do is to provide some clarity on certain technical issues that have required amendment of the NLTA, and also provide for certain developments that have since entered the space, such as, for instance, the major one being the rolling out of the public transport strategy that was that started in 2007. As I said, the main reason is to provide for some technical issues and to also accommodate for additional developments in the public transport space, but provision is also made for non-motorized transport as a definition, which is something that was not in the previous Act, and align us with international best practice on NMT as well as universal access issues. There are also some amendments relating to contracting arrangements that we currently have for public transport services. The functions of the spheres of government are clarified in terms of who is able to enter for contracting arrangements, which is quite a significant change from the previous NLTA of 2009. There's also some amendments in terms of the administrative arrangements for operating licenses, where further clarity and some simplification of processes is introduced. There's also a provision that has been made for electronic hailing of taxis or meter taxis. There's also an important provision that is included for the minister to be empowered to delay implementation of certain parts of the Act while some contracting and other arrangements are being made. And then there's also other consequential amendments that are made where maybe one clause is affecting the wording of another clause as well, and certain errors that have been identified. In terms of the definitions themselves, there's quite a few definitions that will be amended, starting with, for instance, the new definition for association, This is because provincial and municipal regulatory entities would now be required to keep certain levels of information on associations, membership, as well as the routes that they've been allocated to operate. There's an amendment in terms of what a constructing authority is, amendments to accommodate non-motorized transport that have been included in the definition of integrated public transport networks, and various other amendments as well. The other one, there's a new definition in terms of targeted categories of passengers, which replaces special categories in line with the international usage that is used in this day and age. In terms of the functions of the minister, there's also an addition there in that the minister must promote measures that will ensure safety of passengers and pedestrians on our roads. This is a new mandate that the minister has been specifically asked to deliver on by cabinet. In terms of the regulations, there's also amendments there. There are going to be regulation amendments in terms of the minister's power to make regulations on the processing of alternatives, of offering alternative service operators. This has been expanded. This is based on experience that various cities have gathered, and in terms of how they've been rolling out and introducing new services in accordance with the public transport strategy. There's also powers that have been amended to make regulations to set fees for things like operating licenses, which was an omission in the previous act. There's also going to be power to publish codes of conduct for operators and drivers, and this is needed to increase the quality of public transport services that are being currently offered to commuters. There's also going to be amendments with regards to the minister's powers to make regulations on things like color coding and branding. This is largely a provincial function, but there is definitely a need for national uniformity where it is required, so the minister will also receive those powers. And on things like the regulations of meetings of regulatory entities, and as well as the regulations on requirements and time frames for vehicles that will be accommodating certain targeted commuters. There's also regulations on the functions of MECs. The annual reports that the MECs produce must include a certain minimum amount of information and certain prescribed information on public transport. As an example, the state of issuers of operating licenses in the province, the state of the taxi recap program, or the state of the rollout of integrated public transport networks in that particular province. This is to assist the national minister to be able to sort of have a bird's eye view of what is happening in each province and empower the minister to act appropriately. There's also then amendments in the regulations by MECs on the issues of color coding and branding, as I already mentioned. There's also issues around accessible transport and non-motorized transport. This is a new section to promote specifically universally accessible transport and non-motorized transport. In terms of the responsibilities of the spheres of government, the different spheres of government, this is quite a substantive change in the NLTA, which has been introduced in the bill. The power for national government to enter into new contracts for public transport services, which was previously not there. There's also powers included for provinces to conclude new contracts in municipal areas where the municipality does not comply with certain prescribed requirements and criteria. These requirements and criteria will be drafted jointly by the Minister of Transport and the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. So if a municipality, for whatever reason, is not able to meet this criteria, it then allows the province to be able to enter into new contracts as well, and not only old order contracts like it was in the previous act. And in cases where the province is also unable, for whatever reason, to do this, the national department can also execute this particular function. But this has to be done in accordance with the integrated transport plan of that particular municipality. So there are still certain guidelines that provinces and national, at the worst case, should be able to follow to ensure that there is a seamless execution of these functions at the municipal level. In terms of, this is just a continuation of what I've just indicated. I think section clause 7 of the bill also specifies that it's only the operating license function that can be assigned to a municipality in terms of the new arrangement. In terms of impartiality, there has been a request to add, in terms of the list of people that were identified there who may not have any financial or business interest in the public transport industry, there was a request to add members of the police service, traffic officers, and Metro Police as a list of people who also are not allowed to have any stake or financial or business interest in public transport to ensure and promote partiality. In terms of the intermodal planning committees, which are generally a requirement, specifically in municipalities where there is quite a substantive rail service, the clarification that has been provided by the amendment in terms of who exactly can sit in that particular committee, it clarifies that it's actually government officials who can sit and execute the planning function that needs to be executed by the planning committees and not necessarily stakeholders or the private sector, because this is a committee specifically aimed at implementing planning. In terms of the municipal regulatory entity, there's also an amendment there to just provide further clarity on that particular function and introduce the term municipal regulatory entities, which was not there previously. Then in terms of the NPTR, or the National Public Transport Regulator, more detail is provided on the appointment and administrative arrangements for the NPTR, and certain clarifications and administrative directives are also provided in more detail on the functions of the NPTR itself. In terms of provincial regulatory entities, also a similar thing where more detail and clarification is provided in terms of how members are treated. For instance, there was confusion around whether people who are appointed to the PRI, are they officials, are they subject to the Public Service Act, or are they directors? I think there's now been clarification provided that PRI members are going to be appointed as non-executive board members and not officials. In terms of the other issues, again, municipal funds, provincial land transport frameworks, there's also some amendments that are proposed here. I think the main one here on this slide is the requirement to update the provincial land transport framework every 2 years. That a particular requirement is removed, as the requirement is regarded as too onerous by provinces. So now what will happen is that the provincial land transport framework must then be updated every 5 years. The rationalization of public transport services. Where a planning authority seeks to rationalize public transport services, it must consult the affected operators as well as the relevant regulatory entities, and importantly, must start with law enforcement measures before doing so. So as to show that the illegal operators are removed out of the system before any rationalization plan can start. In terms of negotiated contracts and stopgap contracts, this is mostly clarification, providing further clarification on the meaning of once-off in terms of the negotiated contracts, what exactly is included there and what is not included in terms of what that once-off clause means. Procedural provisions currently in the Contracting Regulations Act are moved into the Act, and just sets out the process for what processes the municipal authorities or whoever is the contracting authority must follow when negotiating with affected operators. And there's also a provision that empowers contracting authority to also conclude what is called a stopgap contract. Whilst they are negotiating the longer-term contract, there should be a provision made for continuity of services, and that's where the 3 years will then come in. In terms of subsidized and commercial contracts as well as the old order contracts, there is a clause, a specification in the Municipal Systems Act that says that a contracting authority does not have to go out on tender if the negotiation is with a municipal entity or another municipality. So then that means that subsidized and commercial contracts must then also fall in line with that particular clause in the Municipal Systems Act. And the section that is imposing limitations on the involvement of municipalities in public transport, that section is also being repealed. I think some municipalities, especially Ethekwini Municipality, have also provided some substantive inputs on this particular clause. In terms of the rationalization of services, There is an extension being proposed here in terms of conversion of the old permits into operating licenses. This is supposed to, the current deadline is for December 2016, which we feel that the provinces and the police will not be able to meet. So then the deadline is being extended by another 5 years so that to allow for time for an administrative process that needs to be implemented by the regulators to ensure completion of this process, and then we get rid of the old order permits within this particular period. There's also a certain requirement that has been removed, the requirement that a new or a replacement vehicle on an operating license cannot have capacity increased by more than 20%, meaning that, as an example, a taxi operator who's been using a 15-seater cannot then move to a 22-seater in terms of the current rules and regulations. So that particular requirement is being removed. This is based on feedback from the industry and from provincial regulatory entities. In terms of the operating license itself, I think clarification is provided on various aspects of the issuance of operating licenses to make the processes more clear and more streamlined and to basically work better. And I think there were some other clauses that needed to be further clarified to eliminate uncertainties, particularly with the issues around the exemptions that need to be provided to people who are operating staff services at no cost, as well as farmers that transport workers between their various farming operations. So those clarities are then provided with these new clauses. In terms of the metered, the new this is just a continuation of the clarity that is being provided for operating licenses as well. Now, on metered taxis, this particular clause is being amended to also include electronic hailing as well. So then the provision on standards for metered taxis is removed from this particular act because it's covered elsewhere, but then the section then is amended to also include the regulation of electronic hailing services, which then means that the minister is now empowered to make regulations setting standards and requirements for electronic hailing services, which I think the most famous that we know of is Uber, but there are others that are currently coming into the market as well. So the regulations will then cater for electronic hailing and also make provision that a meter taxi service can either have electronic hailing as a means of operating or have a meter or can have both. So that then brings into the fold of regulation of our standard normal of a meter taxi that we know of today, as well as the newer services of electronic hailing. In terms of charter and staff services, again, further clarification of what needs to happen when the operating licenses are being issued for this particular area. There have been instances of abuse of the charter service operating license. So now the new requirement will be that the applicant must show a need in the form of sort of a letter that will indicate that the service is, if for instance you say you want to transport church members, then you must have a letter from that particular church saying that this service is required and will be required on a regular basis or once a week or whatever the case may be. So you must have some proof to show for that to limit abuse. And also clarifies that an operating license is not required for staff services where a no fee is charged, as I had indicated earlier. In terms of operating licenses, in terms of the general and cross-border transport, I think the most significant one here is that the issues dealing with cross-border transport, that particular clause is going to be removed from this particular act and should then be accommodated in the Cross-Border Road Transport Act. So it will no longer be accommodated in the National Land Transport Act when it has been finalized. Tourist transport, again, further clarifications provided in terms of how the operating licenses are issued and just sort of simplifying the administrative processes related to that. And then there are general amendments that are also provided for here in this act, in this bill, around the functions and of the Transport Appeal Tribunal, just making those clearer. And I think the most important one here is that the minister now is able to delay implementation of certain parts of the Act where the system has indicated stated that we are not ready to implement that part of the Act to sort of avoid legal challenges on why certain aspects of the Act have not been implemented at that particular time. The minister may delay implementation of that particular clause or section of the Act, depending on readiness to actually implement. This was actually taken from the Municipal Finance Management Act, because there is a similar provision there as well. In terms of other amendments, the Municipal Structures Act also states that public transport functions may also be provided by a district municipality. So we've decided to sort of align the NLTA with that Municipal Structures Act as well, as long as that district municipality is able to show that it will be in compliance with the NLTA, it can then also provide public transport services. And then there's other areas to also clean up the legislation and make sure that it's aligned. There's also changes around the I think the requirement before was that requests could only come from NHNA for changes or any matters related to the rail service, and that municipalities can also address those matters through a service level agreement entered into with PRASA, and that is all going to be subject to budget availability. And that is the end of our presentation. I'd like to add, Honourable Chair, on a few matters around consultation that we did not cover in this particular presentation, that we have consulted quite far and wide. We've consulted with the provinces and the agencies that we've spoken to, your PRASA, CBRTAs, RTMC. We've consulted with the Local Government Association, National Treasury, provinces, as well as provincial regulatory entities, the taxi industry, the bus industry. So consultation has gone far and wide, and the bill has also been to NEDLAC, state law advisors to the pastors, and that the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs has also written a letter after a number of engagements between ourselves, a letter of support for these amendments. We also recently received inputs from the Gauteng province. These inputs actually came through over the weekend, where they are also seeking to add certain clauses to the bill that will provide for the establishment of a provincial transport authority. We are going to engage with them on the inputs that they've provided, but I suppose they would also be quite keen to be part of the stakeholder engagement process that Parliament will also be doing as well. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much, Mayor Madikizela. Members, let's take it, but as we do that, we should be mindful of the last 30 minutes within which we should engage. We'll just extend a little bit, because obviously when we arrive in Parliament, the law will be lunchtime. Honorable Dipritas, Honorable Masongani, Honorable Ramatakana, Honorable Musinga, Honorable Sibande, all honorables. Let's start from the extreme, Honorable Dipritas.
Thank you, Chair. There's a lot for us to digest, and many things that I could ask and so forth. May I suggest that we're running out of time. That's my worry, that we've got another item on our agenda, and I would like to suggest that we go back as a committee and look at this a little bit more, apply ourselves our minds a little bit more, because I don't want to rush this. This is very important work. So I wonder if I would get support from the committee to say that we've got this table, it's now formally on our agenda, and we then have a map out a process similar to the previous item, that we make sure we give it justice. I'm just worried that I don't want us to rush through this, but also we have another item, so I'm just trying to find a solution. And I want to thank the presenter for her presentation. Thank you.
Honourable Member, were you suggesting that maybe we put the whole question and answer session? Maybe what we can do is, in preparation for the next meeting, let's have our questions put through the committee secretary to
the
department so that when they come again, then they will be having answers to some of the questions that we would want them to answer, and some of the things that we believe will be part of the things that we take to stakeholders and to the public hearings. Honorable Bumsinga.
Yeah, I want to second the proposal with the way that you have given us guidance on this point. Thank you, Chair.
Now, in the light of time that frame that we don't have, like second that, I still also have to go and pay my eat all today. before 2 o'clock. I hope Mr. Tavis have to give me more discount. Hey, it's a lot of money that I'm owing.
But you're more of a member.
I just wanted to check, Chair, how is the proposal suggesting that, because this is not, it's just at the beginning of the process, does the proposal suggest that we have another session before we publish the bill as a committee? Is what the suggestion? I thought I have a different view. My different view is that whatever engagement we're going to have, if we suspend this discussion of questions, not going to change the fact that we need to publish the bill for public comment before we even have the detailed bite and discussion about it. That process still has to come. So my view, which is a different view, I must confess, is that we should get the presentation, publish the bill for public comment. Many comments also are going to come in, including our comments at the time when we deal with the bill after we've received input from public and other interested stakeholders.
I think, Honourable Member, that is the route that we will be taking. We're not finishing our discussion here today now. Obviously, we have to publish the bill, we have to get comments, we still have to commend ourselves, we still have to look into other things. So it doesn't stop us from continuing with the process that we're going to be engaged in. Honorable Sibande.
I'm intimidated, Chair. Chairperson, I've got a little experience about this exercise. I won't differ because the majority have proposed what they proposed, but you see, what I'm scared of, this is part of consultation, what is happening today. And we leave our opportunity because I thought that by studying maybe to interact with the department, it was going to assist them that when they come back, some of the corrections, the process, I think that is part of the process, because if you're talking about the consultation with other stakeholders as well, but you will find that their proposal initially was not like this. But as time goes on, they are able to clean what we don't want. And my concern, I thought that if we're dealing with the bill, there are time frames as well. If we're dealing with the bill, I don't know whether are we going to cover them. Because today, I was happy that, unfortunately, I know that's the issue of time. I thought that we were going to, as members, to bring highlights that, like what we've done in the previous bill, to say here and here and here and here and here. That's what I thought. I was quiet when you were talking. So that is my worry.
Remember, you must speak to me.
Just protect me, Chairperson.
Okay.
Because I'm
are talking, we keep quiet. But when once you open their mouth, they start their own meetings. So, Chairperson, I don't know, because myself, I thought that we will bring some few highlights to say. I'll put an example. Do you still remember our oversight, my worry, where I was going to start? Do you still my worry, Chairperson, as I'm talking to you now, there are challenges of which I thought that this bill was going to try to sort some of these challenges in terms of the roots. Yes, in the, I mean, like the conflicts in the case and conflicts in Mpumalanga, there are a lot of conflicts which they need the intervention. And I thought that some of these things was going to help us. And if you still remember our oversight visit when we visited Pretoria in terms of the public transport. Also, there was the thing, there are things which they raised between the operators from the taxi side and also from this. And I thought that this bill was going to assist us. For an example also, yesterday when there were highlights in the news about the conflicts between the Uber and the taxi. So the bill is brought to us. We take it back instead of bringing some contributions. On the ground, conflicts are continuing. And lastly, I thought that in terms of our, for us, the exercise which we're supposed to do is to harmonize the relationship between the operators. Because all of them, the home is with us. Lastly, remember, I don't know now. 7%, we still do have, I'll put an example in terms of operating. Do you still remember the issue of new demarcation of municipalities and the like? To us, with the government, they have a new demarcation, but with some of the national structures and provincial structures, they are still struggling to get their acts together in terms of operating. So that's where I wanted maybe. But if the majority say what, I'll keep quiet.
You know, maybe I didn't put my English in a proper manner. Kitabuaga Setswana, so that you can understand, because that is the language I understand better. Dipuso tse re nang le tsona a re di baakanyeng sentle re di romeleng ko department-eng so that ha re tlo kopana le bona gape la bobedi e ba gore tse re ne re tshwanetse re di buditse ka jeko ba na le tsona ba di tlhaloganya ba itse gore re tlo di baakanya yang. Ga ke ganetse ope gore a ka bua, but ka ntlha ya gore re makgabe a dipapetle masonga ni don't intimidate me. Oh sorry Honor Akbar. I was saying to Honorable Sibanda that probably when I was talking initially, I didn't put things into proper perspective. But using the language that I understand better, that is how I'm saying it. I said initially that we've got questions, all of us. Let's write them, bring them to the committee secretary, forward to the department. This is part of whatever. We can even write our names so that, but the response will come back to us and will publicize to all the other members. That is what we are saying. But we are not stopping people from asking questions if they see that these questions are very, very critical questions that they can be able to put forward. It can wait to consultation. The other thing is, this is the beginning of the process. We will still come back as a committee, sit, make reflections, If there are other issues that we believe we should call the department again, we will call the department. We still have to go into engagement with other stakeholders. But in view of the fact that Parliament today has been restricting, fortunately I had the bell ringing, it looks like there's a recess of some sort or lunch time. Maybe we can push it up to 12:30 and then when we check it.
Yeah,
then we are able to do that. We are able to continue. So, but my whole bone of contention is this is work in progress. And it doesn't stop other processes that we are supposed to engage in, like publication of the bills, receiving all the other information. When we do come back after the local government election, we will continue engaging with the bills and making sure that in terms of the parliamentary requirements, we do what is right. I did not say people should not. Unfortunately, the response that I'm giving to the person who is gone, all of you here, maybe I should just stop there. Because when I answered him, he just left. So he's like, well, again. Honorable members, can we agree to go into the quarterly report, the fourth quarterly report? Okay. Mr. Kavis.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can we then get clarity? Members of the portfolio committee will submit input,
yes,
questionnaire to us.
Questions to you.
To us so that you can factor them in terms of some responses and also go out, have a parallel process, go out and for public comments, and then those inputs will be also part of the public comments. Is that what we are saying?
No. What we're doing now, in preparation to go into public hearings, this is part of the process that normally happens in Parliament in preparation to the public hearings, in preparation to the work that legislators should do. So, in essence, when we will give you some of the questions that we were supposed to ask you here, we'll do it in writing to yourself, and then you will definitely respond to us, and we will share amongst ourselves. But we will continue with our processes, parliamentary processes that we are to engage in, that will lead to public hearings, that will eventually lead to the bill going to Parliament to be tabled in Parliament, which actually eventually it will be an act. But can we move the next agenda item, which is the quarterly report? Kavisa?
No, thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, members of the honorable members of the portfolio committee, and my colleagues. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I know that the committee is pressed for time. Well, I will do justice though, but we'll be quite fast in terms of our presentations here. This is the presentation that talks to the fourth quarter performance, and it's a report thereof. We will look at few outlines, which is like your background, your performance trends, and comparative analysis, the key achievements of quarter four, and we want to highlight some challenges that we had in quarter four, and the financial performance information, we will also deal with that. As part of our background, this report focuses on the progress made with the implementation of the programs and projects in the period covering the 1st of February 2016 to the 31st of March 2016. The focus was on the optimal performance of the deliverables in terms of the MTF 2015-16 to 2017-18. Report is therefore in compliance with the relevant statutory requirements. Based on the performance status report in quarter 3, an action plan to address identified red flags was developed and implemented to address the issues in terms of this current reporting, which is the quarter four. And we had a task team that we consolidated within ourselves among our EXCO to deal with this red flag so that we deal with those issues and challenges that we face. As a result of that, you can see that when you look at the DOT comparative analysis performance per program per quarter, you will find that the focus was mainly on maritime, which is program 6, where we had a slight challenge, and we were aiming high as a department to reach a certain percentage come the end of the fourth quarter. But unfortunately, we were not achieving that because of that. So we had to have this task team that was looking very seriously in terms of how we can assist the maritime branch also to lift their socks and pull their sleeves so that we are also meeting our target. Also, besides that, besides just meeting our target, this was to make sure that the operation package as part of our cutting-edge program needs to be featured mainly in the top agenda of our Department of Transport. That's why, therefore, we had this task team to deal with the issues that were shortcoming in terms of our branch called the Maritime Branch. That is why eventually they ended up scoring the 88%, because it was an entire effort as a collective within the transport family in making sure that we assist each other and all of us to achieve the imperatives of our threat plan and our ATP. Look at this, the bar chart representation, it talks exactly that. That is quarter one was 76, 86, quarter two, 70, quarter three, and then we are sitting at 92%, which is quarter four. I think we did very well as a department, as a collective. I think that is what we can talk and represent with confidence. The key achievement, therefore, under quarter four is that this quarter under program one, which is administration, we see the interns being prioritized in our department. Currently, there's an induction process that is going ahead so that they can familiarize themselves with the environment of transport. The health and wellness is also part of our campaigns within the department. We want to see the workforce that is healthy, well looked after. And also, we have responded to the presidential hotline cases, and we resolved them. 98% thereof has been resolved. The strategy in terms of international relations is now approved, and also what we want to see is we have done is that we have prioritized the audit query findings as well as the management of risk as per the finding by the auditor general and ourselves in making sure that our department is not found wanting. Under integrated transport planning, we also have the infrastructure funding and transport funding framework that has now been approved, the draft thereof has been approved, and it's quite a remarkable achievement indeed by our ICP branch. And also the road freight strategy completed and submitted for approval in quarter four. The STAIR bill was also submitted to cabinet, and consultation on subsidiary regulations that are supporting this bill are being conducted with the Ports Authority, the Ports Regulator, and other relevant authorities in terms of this regulation. And the private sector participation framework has also been successfully developed and is being transferred to the National Treasury for inclusion as a chapter, because the National Treasury has got an overarching function to look into the whole government in terms of the public sector participation. So we've included our own, we've given them our own input as transport in terms of the CFP. So under rail, we can see that the white paper on national transport policy has been finalized, and the guidelines thereof are being prepared, and the branch line strategy is now being en route to the Eastern cluster of the Director General. And the draft National Railway Safety Regulator Bill has been successfully developed during the period under review. And the National Railway Safety Strategy has been completed, and the consultation are still underway with TRASA and RSR for their input as well. Under the routes branch, you can see that the green paper as a draft has been completed and the policy thereof, and it then rose to cabinet, and ministers approved it to the table at cabinet level. And then also the road maintenance grant, the annual report, an annual monitoring report is now being handed over to the quality assurance, internal compliance and internal audit unit to look into that and also verify some other gaps. And the status quo report in terms of development access road development plan has been completed and submitted to quality assurance for further processing. The ARCO is just done it now, so I think that is the water under the bridge. Key challenges now is civil aviation, key achievements under Quota 4 when you look at Program 5, which is civil aviation. You see that the NCAP and the NADP have been completed and submitted to the Cabinet, and for approval. Negotiations to the air services arrangements were held with Denmark, Norway, Sweden, in March 2016. We are expecting quite a fruitful feedback on this engagement and agreement so that we can clear our skies and open the skies for our air traffic and air transport. A Drive Civil Aviation Amendment Bill was also completed during this quarter four and submitted for quality assurance. A monitoring report on the upgrade of Kumtata Airport has been concluded. And as an asset, Mthatha Airport is an asset, is now being agreed between the Department of National Department of Transport together with the province of the Eastern Cape to be handed over. And also the ASTA is very much involved in terms of looking into the affairs of aviation in those kind of areas. In the maritime sector, the green paper on the National Maritime Transport Policy was also completed and presented to the ICTF, that is International Cooperation Trade and Security Cluster in Cabinet of Cabinet in March 2016. And the cabotage strategy and cabotage bill were completed and submitted for quality assurance. The inland waterway strategy was also completed and approved during the period under review. And the African Maritime Charter was presented to the very house and the NCOP, and both, I want to believe, and yes, received the warm acknowledgement and acceptance by these two houses. Under public transport, the review of the rural transport strategy has been completed and submission to cabinet has also been sought and approved. The National Land Transport Policy was approved by cabinet and subsequently published for implementation as targeted during the period under review. And the old taxi vehicles, 811 of those were scrapped during the period under review due to the increase in demand by the operators, and also the taxi recap program review document was also developed and submitted to the cabinet has been approved by cabinet. And final draft of the integrated public transport turnaround plan was also completed and submitted for quality assurance. These are other notable challenges that need to be prioritized, and what are the remedial measures there? Of under administration, for instance, we can see that no vacant positions were filled due to budget cuts on compensation of employees and a moratorium placed by the National Treasury on the filling of these vacant posts. What are the corrective and remedial measures to the effect? Is that we will continue to engage with National Treasury to ensure that a solution is reached to enable the department to fill critical positions, as we know, members, out of the 10 deputy directors general, we only have 3 now. So we can see that we are seriously leaving. That is why we are at the doors of National Trust to help us assist and also relax the moratorium so that we can fill the critical positions so that we can function properly as a department. Under the integrated transport plan, the network was not resubmitted to cabinet due to the non-conclusion of the PICC consultation processes. We did come here and report that the processes of the management, the MENCO of the PICC did not put us there, so we still have to go back and present them again at the next month to the PICC secretariat so that we can get the buy-in from the PICC MENCO, and then we can engage with them further. And the development of the Harrismith Hub framework was not completed. The corrective measure that optional analysis and value assessment report were completed and collaborated with the 50th Department of Police, Roads and Transport. And these reports will be therefore tabled at a later stage, talking to the issues of overarching responsibility and mandate on the Harris State Hub as a framework. And under the maritime, we can see that the stakeholder consultation on the draft cabotage policy were not conducted as was targeted during the period under review. And the remedial measure to this is due to the incorporation of the cabotage policy into the National Maritime Transport Policy, and the process has been rearranged to accommodate both policies. That is, I think that is the information in terms of how the department has performed in terms of the non-financial performance issues. I would therefore request that our CFO, Mr. Lesuano, takes us through the financial aspect of our report, then we will end and conclude. Thank you very much, Mr.
Chair. Thank you very much. Thanks to Captain Gigi and thanks to members. Mine is just to give an expenditure and how we have performed on it. We have spent 99% of the budget that has been given to us. Much more of why the 1%, I'll show you as we go through, relates to money that were held back on the PRMG and other grants, mainly to the one that was going to KZN, and we have asked for a rollover regarding that. So you see, administration has spent 100% of its budget, integrated transport planning 100%, rail transport 100%, road transport 99%, civil aviation 97%, maritime transport 99%, and public transport about 100%. So of the total adjusted budget of 53.6 billion, we have managed to spend 53.3 billion, which translates to 99% of the budget. Expenditure for economic classification, compensation of employees, 100%. You would see that what we have done in most of the cases where money has been spent more in other programs and less in others, we have managed to do shifting away from where we have underspent to where the overspend, if there is any overspending in that regard. Compensation of employees, you see 100% has been spent. Goods and services budget at 97%. Transfer and subsidies at 99%. Machinery equipment at about 97%. And you see that the total is about 99%. As I said, there is a shifting to cover in its cost and state final office accommodation away from certain programs to a program of roads, and that there was a bit of money as well shifted from public transport taxi capitalization and other projects. Now I'm going to go through the expenditure per economic classification per program. I'll start with program one, compensation of employees 100%. And you'd see that goods and services also at 99%. We have done a rollover request for an amount of 1.3 million for the road accident benefits bill. So the RAPS bill would be getting a bit if the National Treasury agrees that we can roll over that amount. Program two is 100% spent. Say for machinery equipment that is about 98%, but the whole total is about 100% of that program that has been spent. Expenditure per economic program, economic classification program 3, you would see compensation of employees 100%, goods and services 64%, transfer subsidies 100%, and that gives it the whole program is 100%. There's a bit of understanding on goods and services due to the Northern Development Corridor and the National Rail Safety Amendment Bill and the National Rail Safety Strategy. Program 4, compensation of employees about 100%, goods and services 98%, transfer and subsidies 99%, and as I said, on transfer and subsidies rollover request of KZN province for provincial road maintenance grant. What do you see? We did, we held back when they did not adhere to the grant conditions, and now they are adhering to the grant conditions, and that money will then go to them in this financial year. Program 5, 100%, goods and services at 93%, underpinning the following project, watchkeeping services, and establishment of the appeals committee and the amendment of the Civil Aviation Act. So those are the ones that have been delayed a bit. Transfer and subsidies also overspend a bit by 1% there, but the total is 97%. Program 6, the goods and services, 100%, you would see that we have taken money out of that to spread it across. Transfer and subsidies, 99%, and machinery and equipment, about 100%. The total is about 99% of the budget that has been spent there. Program 7, you will see that much more of the money has been moved out of this program. In the goods and services, 95%. Machinery equipment is 98%. And therefore, we have got about an amount of about 184 that we have shifted out of this program to cater for the other programs. The next slide deals with the transfer payments, the provincial road maintenance grants. You will see that the spend is 97%, as we said. They have been, there's an available money of about 275 million. That is mainly from the KZN, as I said earlier on. So that amount will then be rolled over to this financial year. All the other transfer payments, public transport operations grant 100%, public transport network grant 100%, rural road asset management grant 100%. And you'd see that all the other entities have got the 100% save for the transport sector, with 85% that has been transferred to them. Transfer payments continued as it is. Taxi scrapping, 75% of that has been spent. You'd see that higher education and salaries for non-employees, 103%, is mainly because the financial year starts on the 1st of January for most, and our financial year ends at the end of March. So what we do, we just pay them a bit forward for the students to be able to study as we move. International localization, 95%, leave and pay donations as it is. We have spent that much. That is due to, it's a small amount, but it's due to the fact that most of our employees have got gratuity payments for long service and all those things. PRMG, as I said, you'd see 85% in KZN. As I said, much more of the money comes from that. All the other provinces have got their 100% spent. PTOG, all of it 100%, as it were. And the PTNG, as well, 100% on all the municipalities that we're supposed to give the money to. Thank you very much. We'll be ready for questions if there are any. Thank you.
Mr. Letualo, honorable members, there we are. Post total report. Any takers? Honorable Khadebe, honorable Masongani, honorable Ramataka.
Oh, thanks, Chair. Chair, last in our meeting, we requested the department when it's submitting their fourth quarter report. It might also be accompanied by the entity status of their expenditure, and I don't see it here unless I can't understand figures, Honorable Chairperson, Mr. Mislan.
Honorable Maswangani.
Thank you, Chair. Also welcome the report, and then also I think it's commendable that they are spending the money that they are allocated, despite the cuts that are there. The other time we raised the issue of civil aviation, Chairperson, in regard to private landing strips, which is posing a national security risk, because they acknowledge that there is no serious monitoring of these landing strips, and they are mainly in the province where I come from, in Limpopo, where you find people have established game farms and game lodges where those private jets and helicopters land, and some are doing that for dubious purposes. So if this matter can be attended to, Chairperson, that the filling of vacancies, Chair, I just want to check. I thought positions at this level of EDGs and others have been budgeted for all along. So why are they not filled, and how does Treasury come in? I didn't get it very clear. Because it can't be that Treasury say you can't fill a position of a DDG, otherwise the department will grant to a halt. Say for instance now, with what we have here, this one is 18 for this, this one is 18 for that, and including the issue of the DG chapter, will the minister brief us what's happening? Because there's no apology, unless there is a clarity. And a DG is a very, is the highest ranking official in a department. So we can't just disappear into thin air. We just get things from the grapevine. We are a committee of parliament that must be properly briefed by the politician, with the minister. What's happening? That's very important for us, Chairperson. We don't want to rely on stories that we get in the passages. The minister should come here and at the right time to brief us. Because it means now Mr. Kavita is acting. What's happening to his position? Somebody must act. I don't think this acting thing in the Department of Transport, Chairperson, should be tolerated forever. We must reach a stage where if we have to meet with Treasury, they come here, the two ministers, and explain to us what should happen under these circumstances that we find ourselves in. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair, and just welcome the presentation, the report. Just few other suggestions in addition to what has already been put on the table. I know the last time acting DG, you were to give us a report on number of questions, but you said we should wait until you have your executive. And the executive would clarify the report before you send it to us. That could be a month ago. I don't know whether the executive eventually met and then cleared the report and submitted the report. Now, as you sit here, for my envelope that comes with post, I still haven't seen that report. Maybe it's received today or yesterday. But which worries me in terms of the functioning of the department, efficient functioning of the department. Because if the committee, you meet us today, and then we ask you the question, you say, write it. When we give you a deadline to write those questions, deadline comes and passes, another deadline is set, comes and passes, another deadline is set, comes and passes, no report comes. Now, I don't know, Chair, what, and I'm raising this because I think that we haven't seen the department since that meeting we have asked you to report on what's happening. It could be either two things. One is a kind of a laissez-faire attitude,
the one which is more problematic is not taking us serious. Another year for the disability to meet. I don't understand why it is the case, but let me leave it there because it's probably overkill. But I'm asking Chair two things now. The first thing that Honorable Mazangai asked is this appointment, DDG permanent as 3-7 are acting. And they have been acting for some time. The fact that Treasury comes this year and declare moratorium because of the financial situation, it's because the department failed to appoint these people when they were supposed to be appointed. The reason, we don't even know the reason why. The last time we spoke about it, we spoke about vacancies at the senior management. Now, if you have 7 acting, you don't pay them? Because some of them have been acting for extended period, even though you change them at midnight before the deadline in terms of the rules that they can't act over a period until you make them permanent. Even though you change them from time to time, they're getting some payment in terms of allowances of the DDGs. Surely there should be a budget. That's why the question, I don't understand the issue. But you will answer that question. One troubling and vexing question that we've asked Mr. Lutzar. The last time we met, we were told that there is a MOU that has been signed with the receiving agency. When they receive the money, there's an MOU, even though there's a DORA that divide the resources, but that there's an extra document, which is an MOU, for the receiving agency to use the money for purposes which they intended to in the first place. Now, we don't quite know what is happening. We may pat you on the back and say you have spent 99%. But the receiving agency that has received money, we don't have a sense as what they spent in the money that has been transferred to them, whether there is actually value for money and prudent utilization of resources. I mean, I can pull one in a head. I can say to you, the 18 billion that went to, was it PRASA? How much did they spend when the financial year ends? We don't know. The information that we had, scanty information, is that the spending was slow because some of the contracts were cancelled. They would probably not spend 80% of the money that was allocated to spend in the previous year. Even maybe 50% was troubled. So we don't know, but you can maybe tell us, including all the receiving agencies. Maybe we don't have the time today that at some interval we really just get a sense of what is happening in terms of those agencies spending, because they all report to you in terms of the department. At least with Treasury, you know that you are every quarter there is expenditure, you report in terms of the expenditure. But on the other side, we don't know. And we need to know, because there's an oversight function for us in terms of that particular aspect. That's the all the questions for me, Chair. We may not have enough time for today.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I wanted also to raise a concern which was raised by Honorable Masangai. You see, Chairperson, what is worrying me in the department is, unfortunately, the minister is not here. I think there are 2 people who have been suspended now, and I don't know about the implication of financial. I mean, the financial implication. He started by Twala. I don't know whether he's still getting his salary or not, but most of the time, most of the people are suspended with salary. And then after they discharge Mawitu. After Mawitu is selected. Well, I don't condone whatever wrong thing which is happening, but my problem is suspension with salary. This is too much. And then come to the issue of the rehab. It tell me rehab. Because I understand now 811 all taxes scrapped during this, I mean during the period under review. How many left? He tell me. Because we are billing them up, billing up. No. This is not fair. Because that's some time ago. He tell me. And then again, in terms of integrated transport planning, so there is this thing of the, what is it, heritage hub. Why was it not completed? Because again, the issue of financial implications. What about Elias Chairperson? And in terms of your achievement, I thought that you were going to also raise the issue of M4, which is the route from Shaga, King Shaga Airport via Pavilion. Why you are not mentioning it? Because it's part of your achievement, if it is an achievement. If not, yeah, keep quiet. And Chairperson, lastly, I wanted to caution you, department. There is a thing which is worrying me why I'm raising these things. You see, the media of South Africa, if departments, they wanted to request for a space, they charged them 250,000. But if there is anything attacking the government and or the leadership of this ruling party, the page is free. Don't give them away by keeping quiet in terms of our achievements. Because nobody will talk about achievements except to ourselves. Because to them, you are always negative while there is positive on the ground. I'll put it there for next time, Chairperson. Sorry, Chairperson. Lastly, there were things which were raised as proposed. I don't mean now, not now, during our deep budget debate. My question is that for how long does it take for a department to respond for some of the things which were raised by the members? Thank you, Chairperson.
Very much, Honorable
Humsinga. Thank you, Chair. No specific questions. Just disappointment, you know, that during the deliberations on the budget, we raised a lot of concerns of discrepancies between 2015-16 and 2016-17 strategic plans and annual performance plans, and it's hanging in the air. It's a huge disappointment. I'm sure there must be a specific reason for that, but no further questions.
Thank you very much, Honorable De Freitas.
May we submit questions in writing?
Okay.
And if I may do that.
Thank you very much. Mr. Kabisa. I think these are concerns together with your team that members are raising. The BRRR raises some observations and recommendations to the department, which my looking at the whole situation, some of the things have never been implemented as we deal with that, such that it become a repetitive thing. We did that 14, 15, 16. We will be doing that. So these are the things which we believe need to be taken cognizance of. somebody has said that I think probably the department just take that for granted, and we don't want to go to that extent of writing to the speaker to raise our concerns that these are the observations that we're seeing in the department, such that when we do this, this is the outcome that comes from the department. We really don't want to do that. But if forced, if put in a corner, we definitely will be able to, we will do that. Raise matters with the speaker to say, this is the observation that we're seeing from the department, and it wouldn't be a very nice thing as such. We don't want to work in an adversarial way. We believe that when we work with you, part of the things that we have to do is to take South Africa forward and to take this department forward in terms of social and economic issues as outlined in the National Development Plan, that whatever you are doing has got a critical of, objectives that it must be able to achieve. Having said that, we still demand we gave you questions. I think we even sent the documents which actually have been coined through our research and unit which have been commented to by Advocate Nair to say these are the observations, these are the things which actually some of them you need to correct, because I mean when you look at the strategic plan, willy-nilly it changes, the APP, the targets, from time to time they get, you know, done in a manner which actually is not right. Go and look into those things. And when you will be submitting what we have requested for Friday, we expect that those which should have been submitted before the tabling of the budget still is submitted, because definitely if that does not happen, we will have no option but to report this to the leadership of parliament. We will have no option but to report this to the leadership of parliament. We will copy the minister, of course, to say this is what has happened in under her leadership, and therefore we're taking this matter up with the leadership of parliament. There is something that is very funny. Probably I need to be schooled on this matter. You will talk about quality assurance. You will talk about management meetings which are supposed to happen. You talk about the internal processes which have got absolutely nothing to do with parliament. And when you come to parliament, you kind of report that these are the things which have held you to be unable to do your work. How long does it take for quality assurance? By now, I think Advocate Masumbuga, you should be able to tell us that if we take legislation to management, it takes this long. We take it to a committee of directors general, this is how long it will take. We take it to this, all the processes, and then we are able to say the total overall process of starting with the legislation until to where it comes to parliament, it takes this long. Because, I mean, ever since I arrived in parliament in 2014, we've been talking about the RAPS bill. It hasn't arrived in parliamentary shores. We've been talking about amendment of the aviation authority, maritime, you name it, you get it. They don't, it's there in the APP, it's there in the strategic plan. It's never happening. When you look at it, it's a shifting target, because it will come 2016, get pushed 2017, 2018, just like that. And I've said, you know, remember that the life of a politician is like a life of a butterfly. 1 minute you are a butterfly, the next minute you are a cuckoo. You are in a cocoon, the next minute you are a lover, just like that. We're not here forever. We can't come here and then we're told that the Rams Bill is coming. And it's forever not coming. Last year I read to you that during the time of Mashalela, he issued, Director General Mr. Mashalela, he issued out a statement on the 12th of August 2012 talking about the stair, that a stair has been processed. Now we hear that up until now, 2012, 4 years ago, Mashalela said it's been dealt with, it's a thing of the past. We're still listening to the stories. You're telling us stories, you know. Maybe we may be children to listen to bedtime stories, but we're able to understand that this is repetitive. If it's my grandchildren, they will tell me, but you told us this. They want to hear something else. So these bedtime stories that you are telling us, to us really, it doesn't work. You giving donations to who? How much? College? Dilafas. The donations that you giving out, dishing out donations. You don't even know. Or Fabo Mang, or Fabo Guy, it's just donations, which actually is an overall. Are you giving it to me? What exactly are these donations all about? Something that is very, very challenging. But you know, my colleagues have spoken to the post of the Director General. I assume that they have been budgeted for. And therefore it's just a matter of advertising and filling up those posts. But when you look at your budget in terms of compensation of employees, it's overheating. And most of the posts have not been filled. What is the rationale? What is it that we are not probably, if you can be able to explain to us, because obviously, an indication is that the budget has been cut, we understand that. But even before probably Treasury did that, year before last, your budget was overheating in terms of compensation of employees. So these are the things that we need to do. DDGs who are here and the acting DDGs who are here, please try and pull up your check up so that we can be able to be like other departments. You know, when somebody speaks about the Department of Home Affairs, you become very excited because that was one of the worst departments. Now it's one of the best departments. You come into Home Affairs, look if you want an ID or whatever, in 2 weeks' time you got the ID. When you arrive there, it's written this is what is supposed to happen. Look at what SARS is doing. And I can also take from within your ambit. You don't even need to go and rewind the world. Look at some of your entities, AXA, SACA, ATMS, they're doing very well. RAF is changing to the better. Because when you listen to people on the ground, the impact that is making, I was in Bushbuck Ridge after RAF went to Bushbuck Ridge and just doing house visits and stuff like that. People are very excited because they are able to feel the impact of government through what some of the entities are doing. Can't you go and copy some of these things? Do Operation Copa Inguazo. You know Operation Copa Inguazo, Kanisa. Well, you understand what I'm saying. Operation copy everything that is good. Operation Copa Inguazo, Sub-Sasek. Please do that. It will definitely be able to assist you when you do that. Start in your union. You give money to the provinces. we go to Northwest, money has been expended for what? Nothing. Do MOUs, if need be, don't give them money, because that money has not been used for what it was meant to be used. We just withdraw that money, because in agriculture there was a grant like yours which was sent to provincial government. But what was good was that you bring in a business plan which will say these are the things that we are going to be doing once you know that your budget is so much. And out of that, on a quarterly basis, you submit reports of what is happening with that money, even though it is in the provincial treasury's ambit, you still submit. Nobody will touch that. If you did not use it, it goes back to national government because you didn't use it. You just allow that money to be used willy-nilly. Colleagues, wow, it's almost 5:30. You have written these questions. We are going to be saying to yourself, this is the third one. Write it down, Valerie, because we have given them two assignments. This is the third assignment. All the questions that have been asked here by Friday, they should have been responded to and be brought back to ourselves as members of the committee. On that note, Savisa, let me give you 2 minutes that are remaining, and then we can be able to close the meeting.
Members, thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members of the portfolio colleague, and colleagues. I think we have taken note, as you said, Chairperson. The report that you have not received, I'm just checking with our strategic planning session here, who were like coordinating. So we are saying let's go back and revisit where the reports were. The legislation issues, we take stock which ones are where in terms of what the Chairperson gave us guidance on, and also the policy issues. The vacant posts, yes, I think our CEO explained very well even in the last meeting. We know that the moratorium happened now. The question is, why did we not fill them? So I think we will give some report as to what happened in the process and so forth and so forth. It will be part of our report. So we have taken note of that as to before the moratorium, why the posts were not filled. So we have taken note of that. So we will respond. We'll liaise with the Secretariat Varela in terms of the input that the portfolio committee needs us to respond by Friday. We will engage with her directly so that there's nothing that is falling through the cracks. But we were under the impression that the report that we promised that come through the portfolio committee, but if that has not happened, it's our apology. We'll make a follow-up on that and then rekindle the spirit. I think that is what we would do. Thank you very much. It's our humble apology that you did not respond. There's no way that we are not taking the Parliament seriously. There's no such. We take Parliament very, very seriously. That is why we are here, to help and get some guidance. So it's just an omission from our side, which we need to take some steps as a collective in the department in making sure that we correct what has been wrong in the past. So also on the side of, I think, the engagement with the minister on some other issues of the vacant post as well as the suspension at a senior level, I think that would be good to engage with the minister directly. We would not like to entertain it here. I would just like to end it like that. Thank you very much, honorable members. We really appreciate the input and corrections and direction. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Rusina.
Thank you, Chair. Before you close, just a kind request, since we had the camera right behind me and it was focusing, and at the back we have that processing cabinet, which really is not straight and it certainly doesn't
convey a positive image of what we are doing here. So, no, but we can put, I mean, I'm prepared to, I'll put that thing straight. It looks bad. It's not right. It shouldn't be like that.
Yeah.
Please, Chair, I know it's...
Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you very much, everybody who's here today. We would really appreciate if we can be able to. I will call you Shavita Friday if it hasn't arrived, because the secretary will inform you. CEO, thank you very much for staying. I've seen other people leaving. Looks like they don't understand, but the meeting is adjourned until in August. So we want those things so that as we go to our communities, we are able to respond to some of the issues that they will be raising. Because it is us who do the electioneering. You put us on a hot or cold phase of a number of things which sometimes you don't do. Because when I go to Mpumalanga, Mulodo Rail is wanted. When I go to Limpopo, there will be some of the roads which actually are wanted, and everywhere. I can't visit Northwest, my hometown, because you did not do the bridges as what you said. The bridges will be done. And Ntate Mokoena from Free State phoned me today. He still is looking forward to the interaction that should happen between Lesotho and South Africa. And I can quote every province as to what are the issues that are there in every province. So all of us who are going to the elections, so please don't make us look very clumsy. Don't make us to be beaten up, because nowadays they beat up and bend. So please don't put us into that precarious situation. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.